Ghosts. Have they become a cliché? Or can we once again examine this phenomena seriously? After all, isn't it really our own afterlife we're curious about? Let's delve a little deeper on Jim Harold's Ghost Insight. Welcome to Ghost Insight. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you once again. And we have a treat because, you know, a lot of times in the paranormal area, the ghost area, there's a lot of, oh, I've seen a book like that before, but I don't recall a book like this. I think it's a great idea for a book. It is a new one called Gone on Vacation, Haunted Zoos, Museums, and Amusement Parks. And our guest today is the author of the book, Sylvia Schultz. She is the author of several books of paranormal nonfiction, including 44 Years in Darkness, Fractured Spirits, Hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital, and Grave Deeds and Dead Plots. She says she sits in dark, spooky, haunted places so you don't have to. She spent the last 25 years working in a public library, slowly smuggling out just enough words in her pockets week after week to build a book of her own. That reminds me of an old country song. I picked up on the reference. She lives a short 10-minute motorcycle ride away from the haunted asylum that features in so many of her books. She considers it the highest privilege to share these stories, and we're so glad to be with her today. Sylvia Schultz, welcome to the program.
Jim, thank you so much for having me on.
I love this concept for the book. You know, I love museums. I love amusement parks. I like zoos. I wouldn't say I love zoos, but I like zoos. I just think it is a great idea. How'd you come up with it?
Well, it started out as just the seed of an idea, like they always do. I was speaking with a fellow investigator, and I remember exactly where we were when I came up with this idea. We were at a library, and her ghost hunting group had just done a talk, and she said something about hauntings at Brookfield Zoo. And I grew up in the Chicago area, so I knew all these places. And she mentioned Brookfield Zoo being haunted, and I said, oh my gosh, how cool of an idea would that be to do a book on haunted zoos? And when I got to when I got deep into the research, I realized, well, you know what? I could expand this. I know tons of haunted museum stories, and I'm sure there are haunted museum, haunted amusement parks out there somewhere. And I found out that, yes, there are. So I said, why not put these all together and call it Gone on Vacation? These are vacation destinations that everyone enjoys. So let's explore the spooky side of them.
Well, I gotta say this. I mean, these places would seem to be very fertile ground for hauntings. You know, I think of things like haunted theaters. You have actors who are, you know, on the stage pouring their heart out, comedy, drama. But to the same extent, with these kind of places, you're talking about zoos. You have lots of kids going through, people with a lot of joy, probably actually a lot of sorrow from the animals themselves in some cases, particularly back in
sometimes,
the day.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, when I think that, you know, the animals probably were not treated the way they are treated today. Then you think about haunted museums. My gosh, just the artifacts alone, the history that they carry.
Yes.
And you think about attachments. And then haunted amusement parks. I mean, even if you go on YouTube, you can find these people who like take footage of abandoned amusement parks, and there's nothing sadder than abandoned amusement park. It's like,
oh yeah,
oh, it just is like material to cry over, particularly for someone who loves amusement parks. But again, all those emotions, the joys, the thrills going down the big hill of the roller coaster, and everything in between. Really, this seems like very rich ground for hauntings, all three of them.
It really is, yeah. I found that sometimes the hauntings arise from events that happened at these places. Sometimes, just as in every other haunting, sometimes it arises from the land on which these attractions were built.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even think about that. That's why you're the expert and I'm not. Now, So I guess we'll start with haunted. We'll go in order here. Haunted zoos. Tell us about a particularly haunted zoo that you found.
Okay. Well, as I said, sometimes these hauntings arise from the land on which something was built. The land on which Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago sits was actually the city cemetery.
Mm.
City cemetery was started off in the 1830s as it was a place to bury everyone from all walks of life in Chicago. There were really rich folks with marble mausoleums and granite statues, and there were middle-class folks, and there were the poor people who had just had wooden markers to mark their final resting place. During the Civil War, there were prisoners of war, Confederate prisoners of war at Camp Douglas that passed away and were buried in City Cemetery. But around that time, the city commissioners realized that, you know, maybe it wasn't the best idea to put a cemetery right next to Lake Michigan, which supplied the city's drinking water. So they put together two new cemeteries, Rose Hill and Graceland, and they started moving bodies. But October 8th, 1871, the Chicago fire ripped through the city. People thought, well, hey, you know what? We'll go into the cemetery to escape the flames. There aren't any buildings there. We can be safe from the fire. But what they didn't realize was that the fire was so hot and so intense that it followed them into the cemetery. It burned trees down to below the soil line.
Oh, my.
Yeah. It just, this conflagration enveloped the cemetery. It superheated those marble monuments of the rich, and these monuments exploded, sending shards of marble everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
It completely obliterated these wooden markers for the poor folks. People realized they could not find refuge in the cemetery, and they ended up wading into the waves of Lake Michigan to escape the flames. And people survived that, which was good, but my goodness, when the fire died down and Chicago started rebuilding itself after the Chicago fire, the city commissioners realized they had no idea where these people were buried anymore. So they just kind of quietly said, well, I guess we're done. It's estimated that 20,000 people are still buried under where Lincoln Park Zoo is today.
Wow. Wow. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And all the trauma from that. And how does it exhibit itself? What do people report?
Oh, there are reports of people in Victorian clothing walking around photobombing people, photobombing modern people. There's orb activity galore. There can be phantasms wandering around that just disappear when you look at them. There is the ghost of a woman that shows up, especially oddly enough, in the Lion House, in the women's restroom at the Lion House. I went into the women's restroom at the Lion House. I did not see anyone looking at me from behind me in the mirror, but that doesn't mean she's not there. The reason there are a lot of Victorian ghosts is that in the Victorian era, in the 1890s or so, that's when the Columbian Exposition was going on in Chicago in 1893. And Chicago was over the moon that they had been chosen to host the Columbian Exposition. So they went all out. They built this gorgeous white city in Lincoln Park, in Jackson Park, south of Lincoln Park. And they built this beautiful 125-foot bridge. You could stand on this bridge in Lincoln Park and look towards the south, and you could see the fair, those beautiful gleaming white buildings of the fair several miles away. Now, the Victorians, being very conversant with death and what comes after, also decided to use this bridge as a an exit point. People would go to this bridge and take the short way down, we'll say.
Oh.
It got the nickname Suicide Bridge very quickly. And there are postcards that say Suicide Bridge.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a thing back in the day. And the Victorians, they really, well, I'm sure they thought something of it, but they were much more conversant with death than we are. So people would go and take picnics and picnic underneath this bridge, just hoping to see somebody go splat on the pavement in front of them.
Oh, how it was weird. Morbid.
Yeah, very morbid to our eyes. Yeah. But this gave rise to hauntings back in the day. There are Victorian era policemen that report in their perambulations of the park, they wrote reports of chasing ghosts through Lincoln Park, and the ghosts that disappeared as the policemen were chasing them.
Wow.
Yeah. There was one ghost back in the Victorian era that the policeman called Sombrero Man because he wore a wide-brimmed hat. And the policemen were very familiar with these spirits that they would chase and that would just disappear. So, yeah, there have been ghost stories going on in the area of Lincoln Park Zoo for a long time.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, here's a question for you. We'll move on to the next one, the question of haunted museums. Now, the obvious thing that I said, because I am a master of the obvious, is the fact that the artifacts, you brought up the point of the land. Again, I'll ask you the same question just for museums. What's one of your favorite haunted museums?
Oh, I've got a lot of favorite haunted museums, because there are so many, and because I absolutely adore museums. I love history, and museums are history brought to life. So I've got a real soft spot for haunted museums. I was very, very taken with the Haunted Museum in Nottingham, England. That place was just crammed with haunted artifacts, including two haunted skulls that you could actually touch and hold. It was amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Stateside, I've got a couple other favorites. As I said, I grew up in the Chicago area, so I have deep, deep feelings for both the Field Museum and the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago. And it came as a complete joy to me to discover that both of these museums are haunted, very haunted.
And what happens there? Give us a for instance.
Oh, man. There is a screaming mummy at the Field Museum, and a friend of mine who is sensitive says that the drums at the Maori meeting house are going all hours of the day and night. Museum of Science and Industry, you wouldn't think that something involving science and industry would be very haunted, but it really is. One of the neat things about the MSI is that I mentioned the Columbian Exposition of 1893.
Mm-hmm.
They built this entire grand city for this exposition. It was fabulous, gleaming white plaster everywhere. It was absolutely gorgeous. But it was not meant to last very long past the fair's closing.
Right.
What? The building which became the Museum of Science and Industry is the only building left from the 1893 Columbian Exposition. They saved that one. They remodeled it, of course, but that building remains. So you've got this intense excitement of this longed-for World's Fair that drew visitors from all over the world that is still in this building. There are also artifacts that draw energy. The Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago is home to the U-505. It was the only German submarine captured during World War II. A lot of secrecy around it because in order to glean its secrets, the Americans, the Allied powers had to keep it a secret that they had even captured this German sub so the Germans wouldn't change their tactics and make all that information completely obsolete overnight. So a lot of emotions surrounding the capture of the U-505. There was also one of the U-505's commanders. There were only three captains that commanded the U-505 during its life at sea. One of them, Peter Cech, was absolutely loathed by the men under his command. They hated him. The lore is that the U-505 was under attack, and Cech freaked out and shot himself in the head in the conning tower. I spoke with a security guard at the U-505 who told me that might not be entirely accurate.
He might have had some help.
Exactly. And he said, think about it. He's up in the conning tower. There's a tiny, tiny hole with a ladder to get up to this place. And he shoots himself in the head and he falls through the hole. How does that happen? And it was this security guard's theory that, yes, it was somebody else's finger on the trigger. But the lore is that Cech did not die right away. And he was making noise, which is what you don't want on a submarine when other enemies are searching for you. So he was taken to his bunk and his men smothered him with a pillow. So that was a very traumatic death, no matter who it was that pulled the trigger. So Czech's spirit is definitely still attached to the U-505. I talked to this security guard and someone else at the museum told me this story, and the security guard actually confirmed it for me. There was a museum guest that visited the U-505, and she asked someone, turned out to be the security guard, she asked if the museum had installed hologram technology because she swore she saw someone on the conning tower outside.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Outside, on top of the conning tower, not on the conning tower, on the deck of the U-505. And she described this man. She said he was in a dark uniform and he was wearing something light colored on his sleeve. And the security guard was very conversant with the U-505's history. And he realized that the apparition that this museum guest probably saw was probably Captain Dan Gallery, who was in charge of the capture of the U-505, because when American commanders wear their dress uniforms, their insignia is displayed on their sleeve.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Wow. How interesting is that? Now, do you think that do haunted objects ever play a part in all this?
Oh, yeah. The entire U-505 itself is a haunted object.
There you go.
But I really think that haunted objects do play a part in all these stories. And sometimes we're not even really sure how or why, but sometimes we can trace down why this particular object is haunted. I was able to go to the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, and they have two haunted objects in their collection. They have the Great Bed of Ware, which is haunted probably by the pharaoh who created this gorgeous, huge artifact. It's a four-poster bed hung with beautiful, colorful red and gold and yellow curtains. And it's got this really intricate woodwork on the frame and on the headboard. It's absolutely beautiful. But this bed has been around for centuries, and a lot of people have slept in it over the years. And it was so famous that to commemorate the occasion of having slept in it, a lot of people carved their initials into the headboard.
Oh, man.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Things, yeah.
So the lore of that is that the person who carved it originally is very angry at the defacement of his gorgeous work of art, and I don't blame him one tiny little bit for that. So he will throw people out that try to sleep in the bed. Of course, you can't do that anymore because it's in a museum. But the Victoria and Albert also has a lovely little artifact. It is an upholstered chair. It's got lovely carving on the wood, and the chair itself is upholstered in this green brocade. And that was the favorite chair of the wife of actor David Garrick. Her name was Ava. And after her death, she remained attached to this favorite chair of hers. Now, I did not see this personally, but I have seen pictures of it on the internet. Sometimes, if you are watching this chair, you can see that there's like this fleur-de-lis on the seat of the chair. Like I said, it's green brocade. You can see this fleur-de-lis kind of sag in the middle as though someone is sitting on the chair. So I visited the chair. The fleur-de-lis was not sagging when I saw it. It was perfectly like the cushion did not look like anyone was sitting on it. But I did some recording on the down low, and I invited Ava to come sit in her chair, and she didn't, not to my knowledge, but I'm hoping that I got some answers from her. I'm hoping I caught some EVPs from my visit with Ava.
Now, I'm going to save, for me, the best for last, because I love amusement parks. I just think there's something about them. But even when they're not haunted, I think there's almost something mystical about the whole idea of an amusement park. It's just this moment in time, and you have people, you know, young people with their childhood. And as those of us who are not children anymore, you know, that is a very special time, a very kind of fleeting time. You know, you know, time spent in amusement park can in later years become very, very powerful and special memories. I got to believe some of that carries over. Tell us about some haunted amusement parks.
Okay, well, one of the most famous haunted amusement parks is Lake Shawnee. And I mentioned earlier on in the show that sometimes a place can be haunted because of what happened on the land, and sometimes a place can be haunted by what happened at that location. Lake Shawnee has it all. It was built on land that used to belong to the Shawnee tribe of Native Americans. After the Revolutionary War, of course, the westward expansion started. And this led to clashes between the white settlers and the native tribes who had been living there for millennia. The area in which Lake Shawnee now stands was the site of one of those clashes. Mitchell Clay was one of the settlers. He and his wife Phoebe came to that area and settled, and they settled on this land in 1774. Now, in 1783, the Shawnee tribe in that location had enough with the settlers. They were just tired of the settlers scaring away the game, taking the game for their own use. They were just fed up with it. And in 1783, they decided to make their move. There are differing versions of what happened, but basically what happened was that there were several of Mitchell and Phoebe Clay's children that were out and about. They were either working in the fields or the girls were doing laundry in a nearby river. Bartley and Ezekiel were two of the sons that were working in the field. The Shawnee attacked and killed Bartley outright and took Ezekiel hostage. The girls saw this happening. Tabitha, one of the older girls, saw a brave lift Bartley's head with a knife in his hand. He was preparing to scalp Bartley. And Tabitha ran up and knocked the knife out of the brave's hand. And for that audacious deed, she herself was killed. And the tribe, the Shawnee braves that had attacked the children, took Ezekiel hostage and took him away to the village. Phoebe took the rest of the children and ran to a neighbor's house. And Mitchell was the one was the one who came home and found two of his children dead, another missing, and then all the rest of his kids and his wife, just he didn't know where they were. He got some neighbors together and they buried the two dead children, Tabitha and Bartley, and they went in search of Ezekiel. They found Ezekiel at the village nearby. They had hoped to ransom him, but by the time they got there, he had been burned at the stake. And his body was nothing but charred. Mitchell was able to rescue Ezekiel's body and take it back home for burial. Mitchell and Phoebe were not prepared to stay in that area any longer. They moved and took the rest of their children with them. They were too scarred to be able to stay in that area. So the three children were left buried on that land. There's also a Native American burial ground on that land, mostly children. And a couple of centuries later, there was a fellow that, in 1926, a fellow named Conley T. Snydow bought the land and wanted to make an amusement park out of it. He had no idea what had happened on this land, but there was still an echo of it. It was a popular park, but people always felt kind of weird being in that park. They always felt like people were watching them. It's a pleasant place to be, but there were kind of echoes of the past. There were a couple of fatal accidents at the park. There was a girl who was on the swing, the swing with chairs, that ride, and there was a soda concession right next to it. And there was a fellow who was driving a truck, dropping off soda for the concession. And he backed the truck up without looking very carefully. And he ran into this ride. And one of the little girls who was riding on the swings was killed. That was not the only fatal accident at the park. On July 3rd, 1966, there was an 11-year-old boy who drowned in the pool, the swimming pool on the site. So that is a situation where both the tragedies that happened on the land and the tragedies that happened in the park have contributed to the hauntings at this place. Lake Shawnee Amusement Park is extremely haunted.
Do you think that most amusement parks, if they have any age of them at all, a lot of them are very old, do you think most of them are haunted to some extent?
I don't think a lot of them are. When I was doing research for this book, I researched Six Flags parks. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm familiar with Six Flags Great America in Gurnee, Illinois. And I started doing research on this, and I could not swing a dead cat without hitting a Six Flags park that was haunted. I think every single one of the Six Flags parks are haunted. It was amazing to me to discover this. There's Six Flags in New Orleans and Gurnee, and most of them do seem to be haunted. It's nuts. So, yeah, I think part of it goes along with accidents happening at the park. And part of it also goes along with the intense energy generated by an amusement park. You've got people waiting in line, the anticipation building to go on these rides. You've got the rides themselves that generate a whole bunch of adrenaline. And that is an attractant for the spirits that are in the park. Any spirit that happens to be passing by is this really powerful draw.
So if we find ourselves at a zoo or a museum or amusement park, what are some telltale signs we can look for to discover a haunting during our visit, possibly?
Well, I always say the best instrument that you have for ghost hunting is your own body. Your body knows when there is energy of a different sort around. If you are walking through Lincoln Park Zoo and you see someone dressed in Victorian clothing that seems like they're kind of out of place, out of time, that's a good indication that you're probably looking at a ghost. If you're standing in a museum in front of a case that holds artifacts and you feel someone standing at your side, maybe looking over your shoulder at this thing that they used to own, maybe you're not alone when you're looking at that case. And if you're walking around an amusement park, just trying to decide which ride you're going to go on next, just pay attention to the people that are around you. Some of them may have bought a ticket to get in. Some of them may not have had to pay admission.
And you know what occurs to me? You were talking about Victorian, somebody in Victorian dress. Sometimes you may see a ghost and not realize it because you think they're a performer or they're part of the shtick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are a couple of zoos that have that. There are a couple of zoos that people have come up to the docents at the zoos and say, well, I didn't know that you had Victorian people walking around in costume. What's up with that? And the docents say, well, no, we don't.
Yeah, we had a story like that on my campfire show. Somebody literally in a museum, I can't remember the context or what it was, but they said, oh, that's neat. They have actors walking around, and it wasn't an actor.
Yeah, that apparently happens quite a lot at the Titanic exhibit in Las Vegas.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
And it would make sense.
There was, we're moving away from zoos, museums, and amusement parks right now. But yeah, there was a photographer who was taking pictures of the Titanic exhibit in Las Vegas to put together a brochure to advertise it. And he saw a woman in 1912 clothing, and he assumed that she was an actress hired to provide color to the set. And he asked if she wanted to have her picture taken for this brochure, and she ignored him. And he asked her again. He went about his business taking photographs, and she was still there. So he asked her again, and that's when she vanished in front of him.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting indeed. And so is the book Gone on Vacation with Sylvia Schultz. And we've only scratched the surface of the many haunted locations she covers in the book. Sylvia, where can people find the book and more info on everything you do?
Well, you can visit me at sylviaschultz.wordpress.com. Last name is spelled S-H-U-L-T-S. Don't put a C in there. It doesn't belong. My books are available on Amazon, of course, but I also like to send people to a place called bookshop.org. When you make a purchase at Bookshop, part of the purchase price actually goes to a fund that is divvied up between independent bookstores every month. So it's a great way to support indie bookstores. Amazon doesn't need our help, but indie bookstores do. And bookshop.org is a wonderful way to support an independent bookstore, even if you can't visit in person.
That's a great idea. That is a great idea. Sylvia Schultz, thank you. And I hope everybody checks out Gone on Vacation.
Jim, thank you so much for inviting me on the show. It's been a blast, and I sure appreciate it.
Very good. And thank you for tuning into the show. And when you're in that zoo or museum or amusement park, look out. There might be a lot more than meets the eye. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody.